And good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. Phil Conlon will be back with us, I think, next week, if you're wondering where Phil is. We use that word. He's on assignment, and he'll fill us in about news. Fill us in. What do you know? I walked right into that one. Later in the show, we're going to be talking about the Labor Notes Conference that was held in Chicago, and the mayor of the city of Chicago opened the meeting. That's going to be really interesting. We'll be talking to Tony Leah of Unifor, often joins us as a commentator on labor news, and there's quite a bit of labor news, actually. We're going to ask Tony about the situation with the Canadian Labor Congress. Their meeting on this past, weekend, where the executive met, and they all agreed they didn't like Poilievre. The rest of it, I guess, is we'll have to find out about. There's some announcements. I want to make sure to say this right at the top. There is a new book by Harry Glasspeak, law professor, retired, and it's called Law at Work, The Coercion and Co-option of the Working Class. And it's published by Between the Lines and on Wednesday, May 8, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Workers' Action Center, 720 Spadina Avenue on the second floor, Suite 206. There's going to be a talk by Harry about his book and about how the laws, even the laws set, which were drawn to protect or help workers, often prove to be shackles, if I've got the expression right. And that's really an important topic. And again, it's going to be at on Wednesday, May 8, at 7 to 9 p.m., the Workers Action Center, 720 Spadina Avenue, second floor, Suite 206, Harry Glasspeak. The book is Law at Work, The Coercion and Co-option of the Working Class. And we'll get, as I said, we'll get more on that subject from Tony Leah later on, about maybe a quarter past. And I want to make sure that I mention a site that we need to be going to at this moment, I believe. There is an organization, the Palestine General Federation of Trade Unions, and they are calling for action on May 1st, of course, International Workers' Day, and on Nakba Day, the May 15th, they're calling on all organized labor, people in organized labor and workers generally, to join in demonstrations and support for the people of Gaza. They have a site, workersinpalestine.org, workersinpalestine.org. And I want to thank Henry for bringing me that update and to remind us, and we'll be talking about it up to and including those dates. The there's many important stories. It's hard to put your finger on which ones. I probably ought to announce another one regarding the situation of Rwanda. We're in the month of April. April is a terrible month for the Rwandan people, and particularly the diaspora, because there's a campaign always heightened in April each year as a way to reinforce solidarity in the Western capitals for the government of Paul Kagame in Rwanda. And they intimidate those in the diaspora who are critics of Kagame. And many, many unfortunate and ugly things have happened to people who exercise their rights, particularly the United States, they have the First Amendment. They exercise their right to say what they think happened in April of 1994 and many have paid a terrible high price. And so I recommend that you go to a Black Agenda Report and read Ann Garrison. She's also in, she has an opinion piece in the Canton paper, Canton, Ohio, home of the Hall of Fame, Football Hall of Fame, NFL Hall of Fame is in Canton, Ohio. But that is in that city, a Rwandan, highly accomplished individual with a solid family, solid reputation. 30 years after 1994, he is being now railroaded in a very ugly situation. Ann Garrison has written about it. It's called the Canton Repository. My guess is you'll have to, there might be a wall there, paywall. But the main thing is if you go to, just Google Ann Garrison, go to Black Agenda Report, and she has outlined the story about this individual, Mr. Shimiyi. There is another case going on in opening in Belgium where a former minister of justice who was a very upstanding legal, well, I'd call him a scholar. He was certainly a courageous man. He represented people from all areas in the country of Rwanda. Nobody ever claimed he did anything bad other than be an upstanding lawyer. And when he was the Minister of Justice, he was attempting to enforce laws on hate speech in the country. And he ended up, he is himself now being pursued by the government of Rwanda because, you see, even though he provided, I would call it, a political legal cover for them because he accused many people in the previous government of bad deeds, unfortunately, he is not, unfortunately for him, he is not an apologist for the current government and indeed has been a critic of it. So if you want to know how to define somebody who currently, in current usage, of who is guilty, of who's a genocidaire, that would be anybody who criticizes Paul Kagame. If you criticize the current leader or his organization, the RPF, you will be labeled and you will be pursued. And because of Washington and London and Paris and Ottawa being staunch supporters of Paul Kagame, you will be in big trouble, as is this the individual in Belgium and that Mr. Shimiyi in Canton. I got to keep saying Canton, Ohio. And we've been following it on the Taylor Report. We're going to keep on doing that because there's much to be told. Something that needs to be said about the kind of exchange, violent exchange, between states, Iran and Israel. And on this show, we have emphasized that for some reason, people want to talk about, people want to talk about the aftershock, but don't want to talk about the shock. To get the sequence right, Israel attacked an embassy compound. It was certainly Iranian embassy, in Damascus, and they killed the attack on an embassy, which is an act of war, certainly not tolerated by international law. they carried out that attack, and the Islamic Republic responded. And then the question became, well, will mighty Israel do what they usually do? And so the reports have come that, yes, they did something. And so here's the problem that we point out. I shouldn't say problem, actually. First of all, when Islamic Republic responded, they said that they had struck two military bases, actually three, in that attack. And everyone is, all the media so far has only talked about, oh, there was little or no damage. It's turned into kind of an immediate propaganda war. And we asked on the show last week, did they hit those spots or not? Because if they did, that would mean they were effective. But I don't see the CBC or CNN or New York Times trying to find out. Instead, they want to move on. And today's New York Times is saying, well, the Western powers had a great deal of effort to restrain Israel in its response. So let's highlight something about this. Israel has not yet said they did anything. They didn't say they did attack. They're permitting everybody to talk about how they did. Here's another detail. Iran says, we don't know if they attacked or not, because they said that we don't have evidence of where these, they say they shot down three drones in the center of the country, a place called Isfahan. And Iran says, formally and officially, we don't have any information that they did attack. So why is everybody playing the game? I don't really like playing games like that. I want to know, did Israel, their government, their military, has not said that they attacked? Now, we all know, yes, apparently they did. Apparently there was some kind of attack. But we're talking about a weasel here who's trying to have it both ways. We carried this thing out. Well, you did you? Well, why don't you announce that you did? Why don't you announce that you did? And here's another very important fact. The Islamic Republic, when they were struck, when their embassy was hit and Iranian nationals were killed, they went to do something. And the Americans, and I believe the Canadians agreed with them, although somebody called Bob Ray and find out. They said, this is your job. This is for you, the United Nations, to condemn this attack on us. They didn't say they were going to do anything. They said, it's for you to do something. But the United States, Britain, France, etc., decided to cover for Israel on that attack. So then what followed next was that the Islamic Republic said, in 10 days, we're going to do something. 10 days. And they said, we're going to do this. They said it to the world. We're going to, now, because no one, the UN has not done its duty, we have no choice. It's our sovereignty. And we do not tolerate an attack on our territory, that is our embassies, in a third country, it would be Syria. So they did exactly what they said and told the world with a 10-day warning that they were going to do it. But we have, now let's go to the other side of the ledger. Israel has not said that they even attacked, but they're permitting other people to say, well, they did it, you know, they're this and that. Well, I'm sorry, they left out the part where they actually express themselves, where they say, we're going to do this. And I speak to it for two reasons. Well, one of those states actually operated roughly within international law, and then they acted roughly. The other one has a well-earned reputation of behaving like a rogue. Now, their boss in Washington is number one rogue. That is, these are states that do what they please whenever they feel like it, wherever. They destroyed Gaddafi, they bombed Iraq, they lied about it, they bomb Afghanistan, they do it, whatever they please. None of this is with any kind of international or legal sanction. And Canada is very comfortable with that because Canada wouldn't dare open its mouth, would never dare open its mouth. But let's go back again. I'll remind you. Because I think it's interesting. On international politics, I'm pedantic. Israel has not said that they carried out that attack. By the way, it was a three-drone operation somewhere near Isfahan, and that's it. But the fact that they couldn't say ahead of time, under international law, we are doing what is appropriate. Instead, they simply played the rough guy in the neighborhood, where everybody said, "Oh, he's the rough guy in the neighborhood. He's going to do what he wants." Well, I guess that's true, but it should interest us that on the other side of the ledger, Iran gave a 10-day notice so that everybody could, like they said, look, we're going to smack you because you killed our people and this and that. You can't allow that. And that is really providing some kind of order. It even protects people, actually. Everybody, the sirens rode, and the attack turned out to be a rather curious one. Somebody has to analyze it. But it definitely showed something, which everybody here needs to take note of. We do propaganda in Canada, so does the Taylor Report, but propaganda is on the front page of every paper. And that is that they continually badmouth a country of 80 million people, which has highly developed culture and science and medicine and every other field and military and missiles and satellites. This is not somebody to trifle with. But because of the propaganda here, all we ever do is badmouth them over some cherry-picked issue. For example, they might say it's women, but they never say anything about the United Arab Emirates or Saudi Arabian women. But they pretend that I watched it on CNN last night, and actually I watched it on CTV. They're interviewing some Mad Hatter about, the people of Iran hate the leadership. There's no evidence of that. And this person, by the way, was interesting, was wearing a cross and sitting in front of an American flag, and they were an authority on what's going on in Iran. That kind of stupidity is dragging Canada into a dangerous war because, as you know, we live under an umbrella. We don't have a nuclear weapon. We live under an umbrella called a nuclear weapon. It belongs to the United States. And the United States, I just pointed out, is a rogue country. By the way, Israel has a nuclear weapon. They have several. And that's verboten. That isn't a subject to be talked about on mainstream media. Not to be talked about, but they do have it. And as I just pointed out, they haven't even admitted that they're the ones who carried out whatever this little operation in Isfahan was. So I guess I could make a last point on the three drone attack. And that is that Israel has friends who have fired or used drones within Iran. So in other words, those drones may not have come from Israel at all. They might have been locally produced. There are groups, CIA-linked, Israeli-linked groups, who have a lot of hardware, who inside the borders of the Islamic Republic, just as they're inside the borders of Pakistan. There we're in a situation where we have a state that seems to be an undeveloped adolescent. It won't come clean about did it do something or not. And what would be its justification? If you say you did something, you have to provide a legal, international, politically acceptable explanation for your behavior. Instead, they say we don't have to tell anybody anything. There's where the funny part is. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I think we have some variety of music, and we'll come back and speak to Tony Leah of Unifor GM Oshawa, retired.